Hi, I'm Kyle Barton, and welcome to the 370th episode of the MWA podcast. Sean Wisniewski, Mark Hicks, and myself visit with Blake Laurie, an accomplished custom furniture maker, chair maker, and teacher at his new shop or school in Waco, Waco, Texas, that is. So welcome to the show, Blake.
Thanks, Kyle. How are you guys tonight?
Good, good. Well, before we talk to Blake, and especially about his new shop. By the way, I just want to move in. But anyway, but before we do that, let's see what's going on in the woodworking news. So first up, Lost Art Press has released a new book called Shop Tales, The Animals Who Help Make Things Work by Nancy Hiller. So I think this is, they've been talking about this book for a while, but it looks like a great book, especially if you're an animal person. It goes into all the useful things that she's learned from her shop animals, and as well as some great anecdotes about customers and relationships and stuff of that nature. So it looks like a great book. I've had have all the books that Nancy has written, and they're all fantastic. So definitely going to be picking this one up.
Yeah, I would say don't expect it to be a quote unquote woodworking book. I had a friend who bought Making Things Work and was like, where's the woodworking? You know, this is just a bunch of stories. And I said, well, that's kind of the point. It's stories around woodworking. But yeah, it's just kind of an inside look at the life of people and their pets who make things out of wood for a living.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So. This might be one my wife would actually read. We'll see.
Yeah, there you go.
Because my wife's all about the dogs. And unfortunately, because she's all about the dogs, I've never had a shop dog because they follow her around and not me.
No, not too far of a stride for Lost Art to go, you know, something with pets, as I know cats are prominent in Megan's, you know, work. And, you know, if you follow them on social media, there's a lot of animals floating around. That's for sure.
Yeah, exactly. So if you're interested in the book, head over to Lost Art Press and check it out. Looks like another great one.
Good stocking stuffer in this.
Oh, it would be. You might actually get that by Christmas. So if you order quickly. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's a great idea. I didn't even think about that.
I just might do that.
I might do that. I might get it for my wife.
Get it for my dad.
Enjoy this book. It's about animals.
We all have enough woodworking books already, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. I got so many I haven't even read, so it's ridiculous. Yeah. But anyway, so next up, Woodpeckers has a new one-time tool. Actually, it's a old one-time tool, but they're bringing it back, and that is their pocket compass. So it's kind of like a miniature beam compass that you can stick in your shop apron and use. So if you do a lot of work with circles and stuff, it might be something to check out. I initially looked at it and go, would I be interested in it? And then I watched a little video and went, you know, that's pretty cool.
So. It does seem cool. I don't know how often I'm going to deal with circular arcs, but that is really kind of a nifty little doodad. I mean, it looked like I have the Greg Pelini little square when they first did that first timey thing, or one time tool thing. And it's a little smaller, but you know, be a nice little thing to stick in your pocket just in case you need it someday.
Yep. So,
yeah, I don't understand the pocket part of it. I mean, I don't know who draws circles that often that they're going to want to carry it around, but
It's the range, right? I mean, the smallest one is 1 to 7 inches. So when you're drawing a circle of anywhere between 1 and 7 inches, I mean, certain projects, you're making coasters that you want to, I don't know, hand route a recess into, you know, what I don't know. Like, maybe it helps you, you know, do bowl blanks, strike a center and draw a circle, and then you can rough cut out what it's outside of that. I mean, there's scenarios, but.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about those. I don't do a lot of turning, so.
Yeah, I mean, it seems to lend to turning or maybe some very specific carving detail, you know, something.
Yeah, the one thing in watching the video, because I was kind of like, I was like, well, why wouldn't I use just a regular compass and do that? Well, when you look at it and you see what they've engineered into it, you know, it's got all your dimensions, both metric and imperial, on there. Mm-hmm. So it's not like you have to have a rule to set your compass by, and then, yeah, you know, it's all built in. So, yeah, and it looked pretty slick. But, yeah, I just don't do that much with circles. But I know a lot of people that probably do. So might be nice to pick up if you do a lot of work with that.
I think the thing that the reason I chafe against woodpecker stuff is all of their precision is set to a ruler, a measurement,
mm-hmm.
whereas all my precision is set to showing one piece of work to another.
Yep. Yeah.
And maybe that's why I'm always like, man, I just don't understand why, you know, like it just doesn't make any sense. You know, it's like, why would people want to measure when they could just move some dividers around, you know?
Yeah.
That's got to be it. I just. You know, because I'm an engineer, I should really like this stuff.
Right.
You know what I mean? But I'm always kind of like, why? So.
No, and it's a way, like, and I have dividers, and I've got a traditional, like, drafting compass, you know, and, you know, I've used them to mark, you know, more like point to point kind of, you know, mm-hmm. relative dimension. Like, I know I need to touch here, and that's the same distance from the center. Okay, fine. But it does open up something. Not, I mean, it's easy to think of a full circle because of what they show in their example. But, you mm-hmm. know, if you wanted some radius on a corner that is not directly there, it's wider than, like,
mm-hmm.
wider than an inch, you know, now you could set in, you know, mark a little point that is offset from either and draw a specific radius around that corner, you know, and there's something there.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I said, I just think I'm not looking at it from the perspective of the the customer that they're going after.
Yeah. Right. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, their customer may be, hey, I need to get a 3-inch circle for.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and some I think sort of. Yeah.
I think that's right. I think they know exactly the average customer is where I was when I started woodworking,
mm-hmm.
which was all, you know, precision, or not even woodworking, when I started using hand tools.
Yeah,
because I was in that high precision repeatability mode for years, you know, even as a professional woodworker. But once I started using hand tools, I kind of let go of that a little bit. And mm-hmm. I think that's just part of the process. So
it does say it doesn't ship until March of 2022. So this is not a stocking stuffer.
Yes, this is not.
If you're looking
for 2022's Christmas, you can.
Yeah.
There you go. Early.
But like I said, this is one that they had before and they brought back. So definitely. Yeah. They've had a number of requests for it.
They must have. That's not a bad. That's a maybe. But we know, like, their stuff doesn't always appeal to all.
Right.
They're niche kind of things, and they're, again, maybe enough requests came in that they said, okay, we'll do a small production run and sell a few.
Well, and that's why they do it the way they do it. They don't have to worry about overstocking very many of them.
Exactly. So. Exactly. Yeah, but a good get. Check out Woodpeckers.
Well, let's move on to our Patreon shout out. So, Sean, who do we got to thank this month?
Oh, we always like to give. Yeah, we always like to give our Patreon supporters a little love. So today we're going to give a big shout out to Blake Laurie. What a great guy, Blake! Thank you for your support. And if any of you listeners would like to support the MWA podcast, go to patreon.com/MWApodcast and flick a couple bucks our way. It'd be great. Yeah.
Now, it's not a requirement that our guests be a Patreon supporter, but I might look into that.
It goes a long way.
You know, right? If every one of them were supporters, we'd be doing okay.
Yep.
There's a lot of guests out there.
And I will say, if there's any supporters that would like to be on our show, reach out to us.
Yeah, we actually have one coming up. I think I mentioned it before, but Nick Carruthers, as soon as he gets his new shop set up, mm-hmm. we're going to have him on. Awesome. So, yeah. And he's getting close, and I want to pick his brain about moving the shop. Boy, he moved it. That's anyway. We'll get into it on that show. But the cranes and stuff that he built, and winches and all this kind of stuff, is pretty amazing stuff. To drag all of his large machinery out of a basement. I think he put it. I'm not sure about his new space, but we'll get to it. So let's move on to what's in the shop. So, Mark, what are you working on?
Well, we just got back from a week in Wisconsin. We did our 2 weeks of quarantine leading up to it, and it was to visit my wife's family. Mm. So I was posting videos from the road, and I have never been so prepared for a vacation in my life. Like I have, you know, I had a full week's where, I mean, I have even the videos that will go out tomorrow are already queued up and scheduled. And, but yeah, so I haven't been doing a whole lot in the shop. Today I spent half the day editing the next couple of videos, to finish out this week and get started on next. But yeah, it's going to be raining here all the way through until the weekend.
Yep.
And then we've got scout stuff. So this week's videos may be a bit late, or I may have to pull one of the extra ones that I've stuck aside out to get started for the week, but can't film in the rain. That steel roof just does not.
Yeah.
It's too noisy.
Yeah.
Oh,
I just jump in and say, Mark, I love what you're doing with those videos.
Thanks.
That is phenomenal. You know, especially you're gearing it towards people starting out, and that's just an invaluable resource. And especially, I mean, there's so much printed online and you can kind of filter through it, but to find one guy that's got, you know, a whole series, and I know you got quite a few more to post, but I really like what you're doing there. So
I appreciate that, man. It's, you know, when you start to think about one topic and then you just try to like break it out into every individual question, so that there's a video for just that one question, you realize there's a lot of questions, man. There's, you know, and then like even the one video on setting up a block plane, there's three subsections in there, that I had to break, you know, cause I try to make really short videos for Instagram, just brutally edit down to the barest of bones. And even then, sometimes I can't fit it all. I have to say, oh, just go watch the rest of the video on the website.
Yeah.
But yeah. Well,
you have some great information in that. You know, that one, I guess, process that you went through about checking to make sure that the bed of your plane is milled correctly and is not canted one way or the other. I mean, I went through that and went, wow, I need to check all my planes now because I've never done that.
You know what? If your planes are cutting right, you don't have to worry about it. That was something that came up when a student showed up with one of these brand new Stanley Sweetheart low angle jack planes. And he sharpened it. He set it up just the way we talked about it. And then when he put the blade in the mouth, he had to skew it as far as you could to get it to take a straight, you know, a normal cut to cut in the middle of the iron.
Whoa.
And I was like, what have you done to this iron? You know, I thought he, you know, honed, you know, like just ground it into a weird shape. So we started trying to do all the diagnostics that we could. And we realized that the bed had been milled. It's kind of, you can't say parallel. But, you know, that plane that the iron drops into should be, should pivot up from a line that is from an axis that is perpendicular to the length of the plane, if that makes any sense. So, you know, and it wasn't. It was high on one edge and low on the other. So when you put a blade in there, it digs on one side and not on the other. And the only way to fix it is to skew the plane iron, you know, to the opposite side. And it's a modern tool. It's a cheap tool. It is a Stanley, but it's a new Stanley. And I thought maybe it was a fluke. And then I talked to somebody at a Lee Nielsen event who does the events with Lee Nielsen. And they said they had one that did that too. So I'm thinking it's a systemic machining problem. So I cannot disrecommend that plan. You know, just don't buy the new Sweetheart stuff. If you can get the old stuff, it's great. But one of these days I'll go buy one and just see. We'll do the check on it and see what happens.
Yeah, they came out, it was tempting. I didn't bite it, but
yeah, I mean, you think that the name means something, but
yeah,
it's not the same company anymore. You know, it just
no, and you knew that going in. Yeah. Like, oh, in the 1920s, you know, Stanley Sweetheart was like, you know, they don't manufacture things like that anymore. There's no way.
And then you also have all those Chinese knockoff companies that, you know, I think. I forgot the actual name of the company, but I think, you know, Wood River or Woodcraft sells them under the Wood River.
Yeah.
Brand name, and you can find them all over the place under different brand names. But yeah, so.
I do have a number four Wood River that a buddy of mine gave me. Actually, he works for Woodcraft. and it's great. It doesn't clamp the blade as much as I'd like to. Like, mm-hmm. it, not that it shakes out, but it's just like there's not a lot of tension when I'm clamping it down. But otherwise, it really, you know, it's nice. Blade was decent. You know, hasn't really caused me any too much strife. But
yeah, well, there's also a company out there. Oh, I forgot what their name. I'll butcher their name anyway if I even try to pronounce it. But that actually does a knockoff of a bunch of woodpecker stuff. I mean, in red anodized aluminum and everything.
Oh, no way.
Mm. Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's some guy out of Norway on that has a YouTube channel that reviews all this stuff. I just happened to come across it one day, and I was like, okay, I'll subscribe to your channel. But yeah, he'll take, okay, this is the newest stuff out of China, you know, and here's how it compares to woodpecker's version, you know, and stuff like that. But they have a huge problem over there getting the woodpecker stuff, because it just takes forever to ship that stuff overseas, mm-hmm. for some, especially now, I imagine. But anyway,
interesting.
What's that say, Sean? What are you working on?
Nothing, man. I was out of town this weekend. It happens. A lacrosse tournament for the young guy. You know, kind of a 2-day thing, but it ended early enough that we got to come back and watch my older guy. They've got scrimmages, college scrimmages going on. So it was a full weekend of lacrosse. So I can't say much. I was exhausted on both ends, both from leaving at 6 in the morning on Saturday to, you know, getting up at 7 again and then driving a couple hours back home to then sit and watch more games. It's just weirdly tiring. So nothing. How about you, Kyle?
Oh, well, I've been doing a little prototyping.
What?
Like most of my prototyping, it's in my mind at this point. So I haven't actually.
That's where it starts.
Yep.
That's tiring, though.
Yeah, that's a tiring thing. So
and I've then pen that. To paper, and then internet, and then what you're working on now?
Yeah, I got something for the lathe, and that's about all I'm going to say at this point.
All right.
I think spindle.
Yeah. Okay.
It's just attachment for the lathe, but yes, it will help you with chair making.
I figured.
And then I have a another thing I'm prototyping about my boring jig. So I've been making my boring jig for, you know, a year and a half, 2 years, something like that. And I've come to realize that the work involved in making it is atrocious compared to what I'm actually selling it for. It's like one of those things. Wow, I'm really selling this below cost. So I will probably continue to offer the wood version of it, but I think I'm going to come up with another version that will probably sell for a little bit cheaper, about the same price as my current boring jig. But the one I do now, I'll definitely probably be raising the price on soon. So if you're in the market for it, jump on it quickly.
Yeah. Is there a solution that uses like T-slot rail construction stuff that essentially makes the base?
I'm prototyping here.
I'm not okay, all right. I'm not giving away.
That's the direction I'm going in, since I use that for my spindle drilling guide. I think I have a solution that'll work using some ready-made components like the aluminum rails and stuff. The only problem is just the supply chain issues right now. Getting that stuff is extremely hard without paying through the nose. If I order it from the actual company that sells it, it's great, but they currently have at least 40 days before they'll even ship the product.
Yeah. As long as you have now the time to allow for that while you're prototyping and while you're developing, maybe by the time that you've got it finalized and released, those things will be a little more slackened. And
exactly. That's what I'm hoping for. Yeah. And, you know, with that said, you know, I got probably 15 blanks of my current boring jig, you know, ready to assemble. So I got plenty of stuff there. It's just all the work and getting the blanks done. And there's so many operations that have to happen to do that. I'm just going, you know what? I'm just not charging enough for it. You know, I look at what other makers are charging for stuff. I'm going, wow, that's much less complicated than what I'm making. And I want a lot more for it. But anyway, so we'll see.
More stocking stuffers coming right up.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's it. I mean, it's really actually great to hear that you're continuing to have to make it, as much of a burden as that may be. mm-hmm. means that you're continuing to sell.
Oh, which, yeah.
From a business side, A plus, right? I mean, I get it that your profit margins, you know, and all that other stuff, but it's really cool because I'm really glad to hear that because not everyone makes Windsor chairs, and so there is a limited market.
Yeah.
And you haven't saturated it quite yet, which is great.
Yeah, it's good. Yeah, and I'm getting sales, and I really haven't been promoting it that much lately just because of all the orders I have. So
yeah, it's like, oh, but you have with the little how-to videos that you've mm-hmm. been putting out. I mean, that's got eyes looking and that's got thoughts churning, you know,
and it's there all the time on YouTube, just bringing in sales leads for you.
Yep. Exactly. Yeah, I mean, it's awesome.
Yeah.
So, but the other thing I wanted to highlight is a few weeks ago, I guess on Greg Pennington's and Anne of All Trades Instagram feed, they were talking about spraying milk paint, you know, through like a sprayer. I think they're using one of those Harbor Freight cheap guns. And they finally released our Anne of All Trades released a video on it, I believe yesterday. And it's pretty interesting. You know, they didn't really thin it that much and they got some good results from spraying the milk paint. I just wonder about the overspray and, you know, they eventually ended up carting everything outside to spray it. So I'm assuming that, they were getting a bunch of overspray inside the shop. But, it looked like an interesting solution because they were saying they went to, you know, it took them about 45 minutes to, you know, paint on a coat and they were doing it in like 5 minutes a chair.
Wow.
So, you know.
Yeah, I saw that yesterday. Very intriguing. I mean, we're all looking to cut time with finishing, right?
Yeah, exactly.
One thing I wondered about was the amount of time to rub it down, because I'm guessing you're going to end up with more buildup than, say, just brushing it on and, you know, you can really watch it. So that, I'd actually like to experiment with it and kind of see. But, you know, the results will speak for themselves. So,
Yep. Exactly. Yeah, I'm curious about it too. So anyway, so anyone that's that does milk paint a lot, check that out. So that was Anne of All Trades. Just check on her feed. I think she's got in her profile, she has a link to all of her videos, her YouTube videos. I think it's on her YouTube channel. So anyway, but I thought that was just kind of wild because when they first posted, I went, okay, how much did they have to thin it? You know, how often was that gun clogging up, you know, all those kind of things. Mm-hmm. So they kind of go into some of that. So,
good. Yeah. I saw that on my feed. I'll have to check it out.
Yeah. So Blake, what are you working on?
Well, recovering from a week of teaching.
you just had your first class.
We did. And it was honestly a dream come true. It was actually somewhat surreal the whole week, you know, working. And we'll talk more about the shop as we go, but to actually see it functioning and its intended purpose was just phenomenal. And guys that came had a really good time and we finished four chairs. So actually I've got another class, the same class scheduled this coming Monday with four other students. And so there's a fair amount of prep work I'll be doing. I've got the seat blanks to prepare and I go ahead and do the layout on those. And something I've found with this chair that I've started teaching, which is the Democratic chair, Curtis's mm-hmm. kind of specialty that he kind of revived here recently. The amount of effort, you know, that goes into that in a week is such that I'll typically split out most of the parts beforehand to where we can get to shaping those, you know, pretty early on Monday. That just helps the flow and then trying to get those parts dry. So splitting out parts this week. And I've got two walnut bookshelves that I'm building. I've got up in the loft of the shop, I've got a little desk area and I've got my library there and the books are piled on the floor at this point. So got a couple bookshelves I'm finishing up. And then I've got actually have a live oak coffee table that's been on order for here about a year now. Trying to get that finished up. I think this is the first, and I can affirmatively say the last live oak table I'll be building. This stuff is a bear. I mean, it's almost like, you know, cutting soft steel. So it was a tree for that fell in the yard of a former client that I had, and they they really wanted to turn it into something. So I obliged, but this has been kind of doing me in.
Yeah. I know, back in 2008, when we had the big hurricane here in Galveston, it killed all the live oaks down the Broadway Street, the main drag. You know, it's like one of those things where these trees, you know, did the canopy over the street. It was really nice, but the hurricane killed them all. They're all live oaks, and they were giving the wood away, you know, and I was just like, I don't really want any.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And it does nothing but honeycomb and check and, you know, twist on you. Yeah. So anyway, people ask me a lot. It's real common around here if you can build chairs out of it. And I think I give an involuntary shudder and then compose myself and proceed to answer.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. What I remember is I discovered years ago that the USS Constitution, they named Old Ironsides, and it's made out of live oak. Cannonballs just bounced off of the stuff.
So something fascinating about that, I visited Old Ironsides here a couple of years ago, and they've actually, on the outside, they have 4 inches of white oak, and they have that's backed by, I believe, 4 or 5 inches of live oak. And the combination, I think, of the two woods is really what made the difference.
Oh, really? Okay.
That's cool. Because that white oak has, you know, it's the best Elastic. Bending wood. And so it can absorb that impact amazing. But then, you know, it's not as strong as the live oak. So they doubled that up. And apparently that was the winning formula. So I thought that was pretty fascinating.
Hey, that is. I didn't know that. I knew about the live oak, but I didn't know it was covered in white oak. So yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah,
well, that's cool. We'll see, you know, bring a little history education here on the podcast.
Yeah, well, I don't envy the boat builders that had to mill that down, especially how they did back then.
Imagine.
There were some long planks on there too, and then they had to bend them on top of that, so you know, they had it going for them.
And they were probably soaking wet when they were moving them around, so
Got them bent. Dense as hell, but yeah, they were just laid in the ocean for a while and soaked it all up, and then yoink, you know, like,
I got an extra student this week next week for the class. So I'm building another small chair maker's bench and additional shaving horse. So
cool.
And trying to finish all that before Monday. So it's been a lot of fun.
Well, fantastic. That's great. So whose shaving horse? Is it your own design or doing like the Galbert type thing or the Tim Manny type? Or
so I've never tried the Tim Manny, so I got his plans and I'm giving that one a try. The other 4 horses I've got are Mark's and absolutely love them. So shout out to Mark there. It's obviously, as you know, phenomenal design and love the adjuster.
The adjuster is all Pete and the design comes from, you know, Tim as well as Pete and Burn down in Australia. So,
yeah. So I was curious, Mark, on that Tim Manning horse, really the only difference I'm seeing is kind of the head and the, you know, adjustment mechanism is there, you know, if there's other things that have been changed, say that,
His legs are just
the head or
His legs are just straight boards. And then the stage is on mine is a lot bigger because we need room inside for the arm to pull forward as you do the adjustment. So, his arm stage assembly head, everything is really compact, which is great for certain things. I mean, it makes a big difference, smaller work, especially. But we had some issues with denting, which is where the pinhead came in. And then when you put the adjustment mechanism, it's a one-handed adjustment instead of two. Yes. So, you know, you have to accommodate it, but the whole concept, the thing that pulled really heavily from Tim's design was you could take the stuff off and you'd still have the base. It's componentized. So you can, you know, you can pull the shave horse attachments off and you could put a bull horse on it if you build one, or you can, you know, you can wedge a work table on there and you could use an adds and adds out your seat. Yeah, there's a lot. So that was the thing that that struck me when I saw Tim's design was, oh, you know, we can take this thing apart and repurpose it.
Yeah. My students recommended they have an upholstered seat on it, so you can take that one.
Wow. That's a nice Barca lounger.
Did you carve the seats out?
I did, yeah.
Yeah, that should be comfortable.
Yeah. I think it's just the fact of a brute 8-hour, you know, day on and off the shaving horse. You know, upholstered seat or not, you are going to feel that towards the end of the week.
Yeah. And could you imagine doing that on just a flat board?
No, I couldn't.
I don't know how people do that. You know, I've seen people do that. They're like, oh, I'll just carve it later. I'm like, no, carve it now. Get it done.
Yeah. None of us are shaped that way.
Nope.
Well, so Blake, so tell us, how did you become a chair maker?
So, story starts, I actually got an order for 8 sack backs. So I'd been building furniture for a number of years, tables, you know, mostly casework. I mean, I built some chairs, but and I had built components for Windsor chairs, but I never actually built one. So got an order for 8, and I tried to get into a class with anybody that would, you know, had availability and came to find out they had a waiting list for about a year. So, you know, went ahead, I got a couple books. I don't think Pete's book was out at that time or I wasn't aware of it. So I got, you know, a couple other books from earlier makers. Really wish I had Pete Galbert's chairmaker's notebook at that time. That would have really, helped me as kind of a self-taught endeavor. but anyway, so obviously the client couldn't wait that long. So I went ahead and built those and I decided to throw in a couple extra. So I ended up making a set of 10. I don't know where I got that idea from, but you know, the whole model,
folly.
You know, yeah, exactly. So, you know, making multiples and all that, but I realized as I was building 8, that there were plenty of multiples just inherent in that number.
Yes.
So I finished up those chairs, and it was, you know, it was a fantastic learning experience. I cringe a little bit thinking back on kind of the fit and finish of them. I think the structure and, you know, all that was done well, having a background in joinery and, you know, understanding how to, you know, do some of the wet, dry joints that, you know, I'm sure you guys are familiar with chair making. Structurally, they turned out great, but there was just a lot of nuances and details that, you know, observing other makers' work and all that really, and to me, that's kind of what makes a Windsor chair so much fun, is that you have a chance with each one to hone in on those little subtle details. I love how Curtis says it. He says there's so many things about a chair that really accounts for about 1%. You know, the way you chamfer that edge, or the way that turning came out. You know, that's really a 1% difference. But he said if you add up 40 or 50 of those, the difference in your end result is really quite staggering. So trying to take all those you know, those 1%ers and apply them where I can. So anyway, back when I first got that order, I had put in a request, you know, to get a class with Pete Galbert and Greg Pennington, Curtis Buchanan, I think Alia Bazzari as well. So all those guys. Pete had a spot that opened up later that year, and it was kind of a short notice cancellation. And so, you know, took off work and went up there for a week. And that's really when I got, I guess you could say, bit by the green woodworking bug. some of the things that I'd really struggled with, you know, making that first set, all of a sudden became really clear, you know, just things as simple as reading the grain direction, you know, and seeing if you're actually getting down into one of those fiber layers when you're shaping a spindle or, you know, a part that needs to be bent. And so there was little things like that seemed kind of hard to nail or master, and just being in a concentrated class setting like that, where you can ask all the questions in the world. And I mean, there's nothing like a face-to-face, you know, class opportunity.
Right.
As much wonderful information as there is out there, you know, just having that immediate feedback loop it's just amazing. And obviously, I was working with some wood that was better than what I had sourced here in Texas. So he had
shocking.
Isn't that amazing? We're known for our wonderful Appalachian hardwoods, aren't we?
Exactly.
So that's that really was, you know, so I finished that set and really wanted to make more, but there was a lot about it that was still daunting. But going to Pete's is really where I kind of made a shift in my pursuits. And, you know, since then, I've still done casework and some cabinets and all that. But as much as I can, I am much more bent towards the green woodworking. It's a whole different process of working, and I find it just so rewarding. Now it can be a difficult business model, making these, you know, one of a kind heirloom chairs that, you know, a lot of people don't recognize the amount of just time that goes into it. And there's, for a lot of those processes, there's not a lot of shortcuts. You know, there's not a machine out there that can split wood and follow the fibers like a draw knife, you know? And so right. you're going to end up, you know, regardless of how experienced and quick you get, there's just some simple operations that, you know, have to be done a certain way to get the results that we're after. So I got a question for you guys. Do y'all know the difference between a Windsor chair maker and a pizza?
Oh, nope.
No. Nope.
Can't say I do.
Well, a pizza can feed a family of four.
I thought you were going to come at us with like a pizza only has 8 slices or.
Oh. Well, you can get that splitting a log too. So.
Yeah, that is true. That is true.
So, but I've just found, you know, working the green wood, and it actually is freeing in a lot of ways. In the, you know, building a chest of drawers or something that you have your wood that is, you know, dried, and of course we do a lot with dry and wet wood in the chair, but you've got these tolerances where a drawer has to be, you know, kind of a piston fit, and you know, all these things. Whereas a chair, as daunting as it may look, you know, maybe to somebody who's never built one, with all the angles and the carving on the seat, what you're looking at is an open form with a lot of negative spaces. And to be able, you know, it gives you, you know, you're going to nail all those angles as best as you can. But in the end, you know, you're a fraction off. You still have a fully serviceable and beautiful piece of furniture. And I just encourage people that are wanting to get into it, that it's really not as daunting as it looks. You know, there's obviously a lot of basic principles that you learn in following the fibers and how you drill and, you know, bore and holes. We have a friend that's got some pretty neat jigs that might help with that as well. But that's kind of my plug for chair making. And that's how I got into it. And really my hope is to make it, you know, as so many of these other makers have done, is to try to make it available to, you know, as many people as want to get into it. So
yeah.
So Blake, you're an instructor now. You need to change your pitch a bit. It's really easy if you come and take a class, but don't okay. try this at home on your own. Yeah. It's impossible.
Until you
to do
talk
it by
to
yourself.
Me.
Yeah. Come and see me. We'll sign you up.
Honestly, I've got firsthand experience in that, having built 10 before I took a class, and I would have given anything to go take a class before I set out on that endeavor. So
yeah, but, certainly is big help.
Yeah, that is. So what chairs are you planning on teaching? I know you said you're doing the Democratic right now. Are you doing that all with draw knife or?
Yes. So that's. Okay. That's the one I'd like to focus on, at least initially. There seems to be the most demand and the fewest people teaching it. I don't know of anyone else currently offering that class.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
And I think Curtis said that was his best selling plan, even though it's pay what you can plan. Yeah.
Absolutely. He actually told me he has sold more of that plan set than all of the others combined, if you can believe it. And he's got, I think, close to 20 plans out there now.
Yeah.
So yeah, for sure. And I think part of it is just his vision behind it, simplifying it and the number of tools needed to where you really can go back home and build it. You know, I built a continuous armchair with Pete Galbert. And even having a fully furnished wood shop with a lathe and everything else, there was an extraordinary amount of investment, you know, upfront investment to even come back and, you know, build one. So I think that really does appeal to so many people, and being able to utilize more woods that you typically would not incorporate in Windsor chair building is another huge plus. That's the struggle of green woodworkers in the South.
I was going to ask.
Probably lots. Go ahead.
I was going to ask you that. What are you using? Are you importing stuff in, or do you have I know there are a couple of places in Texas actually named white oak, but do they actually have any white oak there?
Last I heard, he's going to ask a guy in Ohio to ship him some stuff. I don't know much about that.
That's still on the table. So there's really no white oak as we would define it here. There's some that are in the white oak family, but as far as the same workability of, you know, your northern eastern species, we don't have anything like that. I mean, maybe there's some that are planted. Now, we do have the Texas red oak, and that's what I've been using in the few classes that I've done. Is a wonderful, absolutely wonderful for this chair. It's actually preferable because the shrinkage rate on the red oak is less than white oak. So when you're roughing out those parts that are such a big diameter and then asking them to dry so quickly, you get a lot less checking, and also just, you know, dimensional differences after it dries. So even if I had white oak available for the Democratic chair specifically, and possibly only, that would be my go-to. You can't get this red oak that we have here to, you know, you can't really ask it to do a hard bend like the continuous arm. But as far as sourcing, I've cut a few on my property. I think I had three to start with, and I've got one left. So they were all trees that needed to come down. Just, you know, other infrastructure we're putting in. But there are a number of mills not too far from where I'm at that I've kind of been working with. They go through a lot of red oak, and the hard thing is just finding stuff that's suitable for, you know, the kind of work we're trying to do. So to start off, you need a veneer grade log that's, you know, really the butt section. You only want to use about the lower 10 to 12 feet maximum, just as far as stress as it goes up the tree. So I'm working on networking with the hope and putting this out there now so that I could actually have a supply here. You know, I know a lot of guys that are getting into it, San Antonio, Austin, Dallas, et cetera.
Right.
That, you know, where I am really is central. And if I was able to, you know, have a small number of logs on hand to kind of help the other guys interested in it, that's one direction I'm headed. So short answer is red oak is wonderful, and I'm still trying to source it. So if anybody has recommendations, you know, as far as a, you know, forest service, or, you know, there's lots of tree guys around that might be a good contact, I would love to get connected and then be able to help source it, you know, for other chair makers.
Yeah, I think I actually have some. I'll look them up and I'll shoot them your way. I'll DM you. But I know there's, what are they called? I'll DM you about it.
There's the guy in at the woodworking show that
has, yeah, that's what I'm talking logs. About.
Yeah.
Yeah, and yeah, he does a bunch of urban logs, but he also is president of a whole network of stuff, so he may be able to. You know, shoot you in the right direction. And I think it's, you know, it's important to get a hold of those guys that are actually sawing it down. So, yeah, do not put that in the kiln, you know.
Yeah.
Don't saw it.
Yeah, I have some 8-quarter kiln dried red oak, but I don't know if that's going to do you much.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, I have bent some kiln dried red oak. I mean, it was a whole experiment and a process. I'm not sure it's something you want to do for a class because, you know, there was quite, you know, it was soaking it, steaming it, you know, for, you know, three times as long as you normally would and all that kind of stuff. But yeah,
exactly. Yeah. Well, you know, the learning curve on this is steep enough that, especially in a class where you're limited with time, you want everything going in your favor
as much as
possibly can, you know? So there's, you know, I'll always split the log open beforehand, in this case, I split a lot of the parts out, but just to make sure we've got something that's going to be easy to work with and not get frustrating for, you know, students. So,
yeah, that first split is always the worst one.
Yeah. That's a tough one.
Yeah. Well, almost exciting is talking to you about having actual Windsor chair classes in the great state of Texas, which seems that was a pipe dream a few years ago. Is your new shop or school, I don't know what you were actually calling it, but as I said earlier, you know, what's rent on that place if I want to just live there?
Well, come take a chair class, and the first one to sign up can stay here.
Oh, fantastic.
Oh, there you go. What's the drive from you to Waco there, Kyle?
Oh, probably 6 hours.
Yeah. 2 days. 2 days drive. Short.
And no offense to Texas, and you're way further away from my place, but I could get to Massachusetts in almost as much time.
Yeah. Well, the hard part is getting through Houston. Once I'm through Houston, it's a nice drive.
True.
Well, you're an hour away from Houston when you're in Houston, so.
Yeah, exactly.
So true.
So true. Yeah, once I get outside of Houston, it's not too bad. But yeah, getting that first, you know, I would probably say if it was a straight shot, I could probably make it in 3.5 hours or something like that. Mm. But yeah, just figuring in traffic. But anyway, back to your shop. It is absolutely fantastic. I followed you in putting this up, and unfortunately, I think during most of the construction you did during the COVID pandemic, which had to be interesting. Hopefully you had all the wood and stuff bought before it went crazy.
Well, yes and no. What was crazy was trying to get windows in. So I actually got them ordered fairly early, and some of them took over 4 months to come in. So you can imagine, you know, you got a particular workflow and, you know, you got an idea for, you know, target dates to complete certain things, and one or two windows, you know, staying out to where you can't side around that area and then you can't paint that area got to be annoying. As far as lumber, though, I milled, I would say, 90% of what went into this building on my wood miser. So it really was one of the better times to actually be milling up lumber given how expensive it was. Maybe a few years back it would have been less attractive and I could have found all these beams, you know, for something more reasonable. But I roughly figured I've got over 20,000 board feet you know, in this building. That's in, you know, board feet and beams, and then I've got it sided with this whole timber frame structure is southern yellow pine. I got about an hour and a half east of me. And so it is sided all the way on the inside, roof and everything, with, you know, 1-inch rough sawn material. An interesting side note about that, and something I learned not having spent a lot of time milling, is the best possible use for kind of using up a whole tree is to make beams and siding, because you've got to make a few slab cuts first to even get down to that dimension. What you also do is you capture the pith inside that beam. And so all around that is just beautiful wood. Instead of slabbing all the way through, you get beautiful wood everywhere. That was a neat side note that I found, but it turned out about the amount of wood that I needed to side was pretty much the amount of skinning that I did on those initial cuts to get the beams that I needed, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Wow, that's cool.
Yeah.
It was kind of a neat trivia thing there. So that really worked out good, and, you know, virtually no waste doing it that way. I milled up 2-inch flooring for the loft. It's about 2/3 of the space, so it's you know, a third and a third, and then a little catwalk that connects the two. So milling up all that was really the only way that I could, you know, afford to do it. And plus it added that much more personalization to it. And, you know, I actually bought Greg Pennington's old wood miser, and that that's the same mill that he used to mill up everything for his timber frame shop. So it's kind of neat progression with that.
It was funny. It's quite the legacy of equipment.
Yeah. So when he sold it to me, he said, well, give me a call when it's time to raise the barn. And, you know, he was saying it, I think, seriously. I took it as jokingly. And here a couple of years later, it actually, you know, became a reality. So I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, that is cool. Now you had so where'd you get the plans for this? Is this something you designed yourself, or is it something that you hired out, or what?
So the plans, I mean, it's roughly the size of Greg's shop, and obviously okay. The inspiration, you know, directly from him. I made some modifications. One of those was I always hit my head on the beams in Greg's loft. And that doesn't feel good when it's an 8-inch white oak dry.
That'll stop you right there, won't it?
Yeah, that'll make you recalculate. So I raised the side walls that come above the loft floor just a little bit. And I think went with a little steeper pitch, so a little more headroom. But back to your question, I had a friend of mine who does architectural drawings just do me a simple, you know, it was more just the elevations to mm-hmm. kind of get the perspective and the proportions and all that. So we worked, you know, back and forth. I did a few, you know, initial napkin drawings and, you know, trying to figure out windows and kind of how I wanted it laid out. But then I did have an actual drawing that, you know, we had worked out some of the specs for the beams and stuff like that on. So nothing real professional, but it was a good solid drawing that I could actually work yeah. from.
Which, so how many square feet is it? Just curious.
So yeah. So the timber frame part is 20 by 36. So
okay.
You're at about 720 with that. And then I've got a 10-foot kind of shed roof, as you've probably seen from the mm-hmm. Pictures that comes off the back. And that's got a separate room for the few machines that I use. So it's hand tools only out in the main shop, which I love. So benches and shave horses. I've got a couple lathes and a bandsaw in that side room and, you know, keep, you know, bending forms and kind of keep a bunch of junk in there. Mm-hmm. So if you include the loft and then adjacent to that turning room, there's actually a full kitchen. And then a full bath on, you know, the far corner of the shop. So I posted a few pictures of those. And so altogether, it's somewhere around 1,200 square feet.
Well, it's a fabulous really nice. Looking space. And I know, unfortunately, this episode's going to post after this date, but I know you have kind of like a little a thank you open house on the 16th. And I was just like, you know, which is coming up this Saturday. And I was just like, darn it. Now, unfortunately, yeah. I already have plans, but I'd love to. Someday I'm going to be up there and I'm going to give you a call and say, hey, I want a tour.
So.
Because it's absolutely. So how many students can you handle, do you think, in there?
So my goal is 4. Yeah.
Okay.
I think just given the space itself mm-hmm. and probably my ability, that's probably the maximum I would take. I'm very interested in, say, doing a one-on-one as well, mm-hmm. especially if it was maybe a little more complicated chair, be more than open to that. But really just getting started. But I am set up to take 4 students, and that feels like a good number.
So if someone is interested in a class, how best do they sign up or contact you or what?
Absolutely. So I've got a website with the 2022 schedule that should be up and running here in about a week.
Okay.
And so that'll be blakelaurie.com, and you can go there. It'll have a full calendar, and you'd be able to sign up right from the website. So, and I'll put a link to that in my Instagram bio, so that, you know, easy to find. But that'll be the best way. That's been one thing I've needed. Had a lot of interest and humbled at the amount of interest for classes, and just getting a better system for processing that is something I'm real close to having done. So
yeah, because I think you're going to corner the market, at least in this part of the country, as far as classes for Windsor chairs. I think the Austin School is having some people in, but it's not like it's something that they do constantly. So, yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Well, location, and then also really trying to promote the Democratic chair.
Mm-hmm.
That's just a passion of mine, really. And Curtis couldn't be more excited that I'm teaching. I've been sending him pictures, and he's just tickled. He said that's why I put it out there, so that, you know, the most people could build it that wanted to. So I'm happy to be able to promote that for him as well. Yeah,
he's told us about the same. That it's really cool of him.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Did you spend any time apprenticing with Curtis?
So I got to take a class with him. That was another kind of fluke deal how I even ended up in a class. I went to visit him in February of 2019. You know, we had emailed back and forth and obviously bought a lot of plans. And so I was over in that neck of the woods and stopped in to talk to him. And he just happened to have a cancellation for his last class of that year. And I signed up right on the spot, as you can imagine. And built a birdcage rocker with him that I gave to my wife as a anniversary present.
Oh, nice.
So so I got to spend a week with him, and then I've been back several times and, you know, just, you know, shorter stays. But really that week was, you know, as fun and you know, funny as it was, and the stories are the best ever. The information that I was able to glean in that week, you know, studying with somebody that's, you know, done it for 35 plus years is just phenomenal. And he is such a great host and so much fun. So I would love to go back if it opens up and, you know, build another chair or two with him. I took that class with him, and that was his last class of the year. And then COVID hit and all that. So if I hadn't done it then, I don't know that when the next opportunity would have been. So it's one of those providential things, I guess.
Yes, that is good. Yeah, I'd like to take a class from him too. I've taken one from Elia and Pete, of course. Yeah. And I'd like to get him. And I'm still got to take one from David Duyard. I'm on the Boggs.
Oh, the ladder back.
Yeah. Boggs ladder backs. And absolutely. We'll get there eventually.
Yeah, I'm sure you will. You're a busy man.
Yeah, but we were all set up to do that. And then, of course, like you said, COVID hit. And anyway, I got to get that rescheduled and get up there and visit with him some more. But so tell us about now in the future coming up. Are you going to branch out and do some other types of teaching chairs and benches and stools and stuff? I know you said right now you're going to concentrate on the Democratic chair, but do you have plans? Yes. Plans?
I would really like to. I think what I'll do is probably offer one class that's not of the Democratic bent. And by that, I mean, I'm hoping to do a Democratic side chair, do an armchair class, and also a rocker. That's been one I've had some, you know, quite a bit of interest in. So that'll make up the majority of it, but I would like to do maybe a fan back class here next year. Just something more traditional. I think there'd be people that, you know, would really, really like that. I'd also really like to collaborate with some other makers and actually be able to host them here. Travis Curtis, as you all know,
him.
He's going to be teaching his little Jeannie Alexander chair here middle of February. So we've got a class scheduled for that coming up. So really excited about that. So there'll definitely be a variety of, you know, happening here. But at least one fan back class, I think, next year.
Oh, yeah, that is cool. Yeah. And that was my next question is, do you plan on hosting other makers there to teach classes? So that would be fantastic, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You got quite the setup. I'm very thankful that you've actually put all this together. I can't imagine the work and dedication and planning it took to pull all of this off. And just congratulations to you and all the best.
Well, thanks so much. It has been a lot of work, and especially doing it, you know, in a year where supplies were hard to get and prices were outrageous. It sometimes it was stretched pretty thin, but I couldn't be happier. And I'm really most excited about having others come enjoy it. You know, I actually justify building this shop because it's for my students, you know.
So, yeah.
as a bonus, I get to work in it too.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Now, are you doing any commission work, or are you primarily focused on doing the instructions?
So I still do quite a bit of commission work. That really is keeping me going right now.
Okay.
I would like to transition, though. For next year, I'm planning to schedule one class per month, and we'll see how that goes. Obviously, I'm just starting out, and you know, we'll see what the demand and interest is like. but I'd like to get where it was 50% of what I did. So maybe a class every other week or, you know, every 3 weeks, something like that. But the commission work has been steady. There's, you know, always ample opportunities for built-ins and different cabinetry. And I've got another shop set up with, you know, a lot of machines that, you know, I'm keeping that side of the business going. But, you know, it'll be a, yeah. I'd like to pivot more to teaching and even more just to building chairs and working on my own skills. I don't know if you can hear that rain. Hopefully it's not a problem. It just started coming.
Just a little bit. And I didn't know it was rain. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, we got a big storm. I think it's like remnants of a hurricane that was in the Pacific that's moving across Texas. One question I forgot to ask you about the classes and stuff. So are there places to stay nearby? How do you get to Waco and those kind of things?
Sure. So there's actually, given the whole Magnolia boom as of late, the past couple of years, there is a ton of Airbnbs, Vrbo, you know, a lot of HomeAway type stuff. There's a few very close to where I am, and then some that are closer to Waco. I'm about 15 minutes from Waco, so really not too far. I am offering the loft for, you know, one student per class, so that's an option. And then as far as getting here, it's about 10 minutes off of I-35. So,
okay. So it's easy. Yeah.
It'd be easy to find. I've got that. I'll have all that contact info and stuff on my website as well. So,
all right. Well, fantastic. Well, is there anything else, that you would like to promote or, tell us about that's coming up that we haven't hit on?
Well, I would encourage you to check out the Kerrville Furniture Makers Show this year. I'll have a chair. I'm finishing up for that.
So cool.
That'll be fun. That'll be my first time in a juried competition like that. And I think it'll be fun. There's some wonderful makers that go through there. And so I'm honored to be able to have something down there. I believe that show starts first week in November, the 5th or 6th. I don't remember the exact date.
Yeah. So
that,
you know, it usually lasts for a month or two. Yeah. They'll have it there. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I try to get there every year and take a look. And every time I go there, I go, well, there are no Windsor chairs. I guess there might be a Windsor chair there now.
Yeah.
That's cool. Well, congratulations on making it into the show. Cause that's like the premier Texas woodworking show. If no one's ever been to that show, it's in Kerrville, Texas, which there's a ton of stuff to do around the whole Kerrville, Fredericksburg area. So encourage anyone that hadn't gone to that show to check that out.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's move on to our fortnightly beer choices. So I am drinking water and grape juice. So I think before the show, I told everyone I got my booster shot of the Pfizer yesterday, and yeah, I'm playing a little hurt today, but we're making it through. So Mark, hopefully you're drinking something a little bit better than grape juice and water.
I am whenever we go to Wisconsin, I always come back with a six pack of the one beer that I can't get unless I'm up north, and that's Foggy Geezer, which is a special brew from War Pigs.
It's War Pigs. Yeah. I was going to ask who made it, because I know New Glarus is up Minnesota way. I didn't know.
We did. We also brought back a six pack of New Glarus Oktoberfest, which is like Staghorn, I think. Okay. We drink some Spotted Cow while we're up there. But for me, the Foggy Geezer is just, it's the thing to bring home. So nice. I'll be stretching that out. I'll be probably drinking one of those a week.
make it last.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. What about you, Sean?
I'm nothing like that. I wish I could get up there and get that. I ran through Kroger yesterday, so this is available in your local grocery store. Dewclaw Brewing. I don't even know where they're from. They seem fairly local, but probably not. But
yeah,
anyway,
I don't think I've heard of them. Yeah.
Yeah, it's called Sour Me This, which is a sour ale, kind of a fruited sour ale. But no, I like my sours.
Yeah, I was about to say, I can't imagine Sean drinking a sour.
Hey, I'm nonpartisan. Sour, stout, IPA, yeah. I don't care. It's all good to me. But no, this one's good. I mean, it's just it's a fruity sour. You know, And so that's your thing. Duclaw, I mean, they're out. It's like a lesser, maybe not everywhere, but 25 years of brewing. I'm trying to find where they're from. One of those independent guys. I don't know. Who knows? They're probably Ohio now that I say that. So they're here, but maybe not everywhere.
Yeah, probably so.
Well, Blake, how about you?
Well, I've never been much of a beer drinker, but I've always been a root beer guy, and a long time favorite is Virgil's Black Cherry Bark root beer. It's a real, kind of a twist on a good old standby, and I really like that.
Okay, now there's something I've never heard of. Really, that Black Cherry root beer.
Yep.
That's pretty cool.
Been looking for new root beers to try out, so let's see if I can find that somewhere.
Yeah. And when I was, go ahead.
I think HEB's got it, and so it's not hard to find.
Yeah. In Texas.
Yeah, right. In Texas.
Well, if you don't have an HEB, then I don't know what y'all are doing.
I had to buy my beer at the Piggly Wiggly.
And I've never heard of the HEB, so you do you.
Yeah. HEB is just like Texas through and through, man.
Oh, there you go.
That's it.
Yep, exactly. Like I always say, it's one of the rare stores where you actually want to buy the store brand because it's probably better than the national brand.
Right.
Huh.
Yeah, it's like one of those. Yes, I'll have the HEB brand, please. but anyway, well, with that said, Blake, where can folks find you on the interwebs?
Well, you can go to Blake Lorie Fine Woodworking on Instagram. BlakeLorie.com is my website. And certainly email. And I've got that on my Instagram as well. So either direct message me or shoot me an email, and we can go from there.
Heck all right. Yeah, sign up for a class. And if you're quick on it, you could be staying right there in the loft.
That's right. You picked up on that.
Exactly. Well, Mark, what about you?
Well, you can find me most of the time right now on jointeffort.net or on at Mark Builds It on Instagram or Plate 11 Woodworking on YouTube. Kyle?
You can always find me at Barton.Kyle on Instagram or on my YouTube channel, which I think you can find by just searching for my name, Kyle Barton. So, Sean, what about yourself?
We can find you there, Kyle. And for me, you can just look for me at SeanW78 on pretty much every social media out there, save for some of those cool hipster my kids are into kind of things. So I'm not on those.
You're not on those?
No.
I could have sworn I saw you on a dancing video. Okay.
Nope. No TikTok for this guy. I'll tell you that.
Okay. So do we have any reviews?
We do. We got one from Swell Furniture, Swell_Furniture on Instagram. He was remarking about the episode we had with Kyle Kidwell on. It's a really great session, fellas. Thanks for the great show. And we appreciate your weighing in. I was looking at his Instagram page, and he's got some Danish modern stuff, and I'm going to have to start following him. So
there you go.
But he's up in Anoka, Minnesota. And we appreciate you weighing in. And if you have a comment you'd like to share, if you like the show, if you'd like a particular episode, if you like a comment on a particular episode, share it with us and go to our Instagram account, or you can go wherever you get your podcast and you can put a review in there. We'll dig it up one of these days.
And that just about wraps it up for this show. If you haven't already, please subscribe to the show on the podcatcher of your choice. Just search for the Modern Woodworkers Association. And while you're there, please leave us a review. You can follow us on Instagram at MWA_podcast. And if you'd like to support the podcast, go over to patreon.com/MWA podcast. But the best thing you can do is tell a friend. Word of mouth goes a long way in sharing our discussion.